Yo, what up, Saffa Snaps? Welcome to the It Takes a C-Tribe Village podcast, where we get into learning about the environments and interactions of the unsung heroes, the game changers, the people behind the scenes, and how these interactions and environments has helped to shape who they are today. Today on the podcast, we're delighted to host and interview Danny from the Edmonton Regional Innovation Network, also known as ERIN. Now, Danny is just one of those folks that you really feel their presence before you even understand what they're doing or who they are. We'll get to learn what ERIN is and why every individual with an idea or an entrepreneurial venture should be tapping into their services. Now, a little bit about Danny's background. She uprooted and moved from Jamaica to Canada for a better life for her child. And despite having a very successful career and foundation back home, she's had the pleasure to work with the Bureau of Gender Affairs in Jamaica and as a senior policy analyst for the Office of the Prime Minister and Cabinet Office. What I really enjoyed about this conversation is that you can tell that Danny is just somebody that does not take no for an answer. She's also someone who's not scared to call things out if they're not working. She cares a lot about the little guy and gal, and she strives for true equity. And not equity that's in favor of one group or another. We'll get into what exactly that means in the podcast. And most importantly, she herself takes feedback and welcomes the idea of iterating quickly on it. What I hope you take away from this interview is that it's okay to admit one's mistakes as long as you're willing to fix them. To kick off the podcast, Danny is very open about her upbringing and how she needed to course correct by acknowledging her situation and through the help of her family members to help her change and thrive. The second takeaway is that perseverance and chasing a greater purpose that's just bigger than oneself can lead to incredible things that may not be so apparent from the get-go. As mentioned earlier, Danny sacrificed a lot when she decided to relocate her family, and she did it not for her, but for the betterment of others close to her. She didn't become a victim of the situation, however. Instead, she embraced it, and it's made the most out of the hand that she's dealt. Another important insight from this conversation is learning what exactly the Edmonton Regional Innovation Network does and how they help emerging entrepreneurs and innovators and creators. Now, full disclosure, ERIN is a partner with C-Tribe X Tech, and I must say, they're evolving into becoming one of the most turnkey and effective organizations to work with. Lastly, we learn how assimilation into a new environment can be more challenging than people think. She shares what she did to find success with this and how others can too. This relates heavily to the housing crisis and how challenging it is for newcomers to navigate through the minutia. Now, without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Danny on the Takes a C-Tribe Village podcast. My name is Sar, Rhymes with Car, and I'm your host for today. Danny, thanks so much for making the It Takes a C-Tribe Village podcast. What's one thing that a few people know about you?
That's a very hard question. I think the one thing that a few people know about me is that I am a reformed party animal. I spent a lot of my teenage and early adult years just enjoying life. Nobody knows about it now because now I'm like the picture perfect office worker. So it's a well-kept secret.
Were there certain type of events or parties that you like to go to?
I love live shows. I was a fan of like Sumfest. I don't know if you know about that. So that's an annual event held in Jamaica, and they bring in international artists as well as local artists as well. So the last one I went to, there was Celine Dion. I've also went to one with Mariah Carey. R. Kelly was there as well. So I love those live shows. I love the energy of it all. But sadly, becoming a parent, that kind of changed my perspective and kind of tempered that party animal in me.
For the better, right? So
yeah.
When you kind of look at your career trajectory, I mean, you've been involved in many very impactful initiatives from housing, working with underrepresented groups and communities. What does home security mean to you, and why did you kind of choose that to invest your time?
For me, home security means giving person access to housing that match their income. It also means not disrupting their access to housing. So once they have access, then their policies, plans put in place to safeguard. There are plans and like policies policies put in place to kind of safeguard untimed things happening to them and them losing their property. So that's home security for me. So the thing with why I got so involved with this matter is based on experience. And that's how most of our lives are. We tend to focus on things that we have personally experienced, that thing that have maybe shape who we are. So coming to Canada, housing was a big factor, especially when you're new to a city and you don't have maybe family network to help you navigate like where to go, how to find property that fits into your income as a newcomer. So I went through a lot of stages of finding appropriate income, appropriate house. I had to go the long route of connecting with the community. I went through the route of church because that's often where you often receive that helping hand and that guidance. So that's the route I went, and that helped me to tap into the market. But then the problem arose even further when I was more settled into Canada, and then the housing search. I went out and I was like, okay, now I'm ready to buy a property. That was really eye-opening. You find that the housing is controlled by a small few, in my opinion. So like prices for houses, they're controlled by the realtors, they're controlled by the developers. There are all these little players that are there without the interests of persons at heart.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's also a low quality of stock of low income housing as well. Yeah. And if there are low income houses, they're in undesirable communities as well. Yeah. So though Edmonton or maybe Alberta in general, they may not have a system like the US where they probably zone people into certain houses, but because of the affordability index, there's an organic zoning of persons into specific areas into the community. And that, in my opinion, kind of stimulates the growth of certain minority groups. It also creates a segregation, in my opinion. Yeah. So in Edmonton, if I should use that example, you are finding more affordable houses in places like Millwoods. Yeah. So Millwoods is slowly becoming that place where newcomers gravitate towards. Then you'll find less of the newcomer community in places like Windermere. So those are the observations that I'm making. And I'm so passionate in solving this because then what you're doing is you're hurting people. You're hurting them into specific areas. And you're kind of like controlling their ability to grow and to achieve much more. The other spectrum of the housing affordability is also tied to like mental health. In anywhere, there are high incidence mental health issues. No one knows when the balance that you've kept between sanity and insanity, when it tips. And when that happens, especially when you're a sole income household, that can throw a family into an immediate state of panic. I found that there isn't enough of those shelters in place to kind of cushion those families who are facing these untimed events and then helping them to get back on their feet. So what's happening is you will find persons accessing shelters and so forth, but then it's unsafe. And if they do access affordable housing, it's linked to their income. So what you find is that Canada, a welfare country, is kind of perpetuating a cycle of dependence on them. Because you find like these families, because they're so happy for the assistant when they get them, they're not motivated enough to get out of that cycle because they don't want to earn too much income to lose that benefit. So these are the observations that I've been making. I really am passionate about it. I really want to do something to solve this.
I was about to say, it sounds very intricate in the sense that there is no just like one thing that's contributing to it. There's a lot of layers to this challenge and everything, right? And, you know, from, you know, if you can wave a magic wand and try and tackle this, you know, this crisis that we're facing. And even when you look in terms of what's happening in places like Toronto or even a little bit now in Calgary, you know, we're starting to see that wave of a housing crisis, you know, even impact and make its way to places like Edmonton. It's funny that you mentioned Millwoods because when my family moved here to Canada, that was the first place that we situated it. As you kind of alluded to, there is something to say in terms of the types of opportunities that you are presented in when you are organically situated in certain neighborhoods and stuff, right? So it becomes a real challenge because just by where you live and the environment that you're in can have a tremendous impact on, you know, how you grew up to become your own being. So, you know, all to say that it's a very multifaceted challenge. And if you could wave a magic wand to try and figure out a solution to this, what would that potentially look like?
Oh, wow. That is an unexpected question. If I should wave a magic wand, it's to bring about equity in the housing in industry. And when I say equity, maybe we'll touch on this further in the podcast. But when I speak about equity, I am not trying to lean on any one side. Because when the minute you lean on one side too much, it does not spell equity anymore.
But what does that mean to lean on one side?
Like, for instance, if you favor one social group too much, in a sense of making your policies so favorable to them, the policies become unfavorable to another person in the community. When you're making policies or when you're solving a solution, you have to think about the cause and effect of what certain things that you introduce will have on other groups and so forth, because then you'll just be just transferring the problem to another person. So when I say equity, and I see the city kind of starting to do this, is to kind of introduce mixed housing in communities. So instead of all of the low-income houses being situated in Millwoods, then you have some low-income housing in the upper-class neighborhoods like Windermere as well. Yeah. And then you will have persons based on different income levels interacting with other people. And then they too will be inspired to even want to achieve more, you know?
Yeah.
I've always learned in Jamaica that nurture versus nature. You're born with certain genetic traits. Yeah. But what matters more is the environment that you grew up in. So if I could wave a magic wand, I would get rid of some of the low-income housing in Millwoods. I would put some low-income houses in the neighborhoods that they're not typically are in as well. Yeah. That's one of the solutions I see.
Yeah. I love that. On that note of your heritage being from Jamaica, example that you are providing in the community of, you know, how you've been able to, seems like from what an outsider's perspective, achieve so much in such little time. What were some of those maybe experiences, or who were some of those people that helped kind of shape who you are? I think to kind of expand on that a little bit, were there things that maybe occurred when you were younger that maybe you didn't really realize it then, but have evolved to be something very meaningful in your life and help shape who you are?
I may get too personal for this. I have to say that my mom, from as a very young age, just seeing the things that she went through, I can say that the Black community, especially the Caribbean Black community, they struggle with family relation. Mm. So you will always find, you most typically find female-headed households in like Jamaica. And mine was a female-headed household. My mom and dad, they were married, but my mom raised all five of us on her own, I should say. And we're all college educated, and she did it on a secretary's salary. So she is like one of the strongest women out there. And just having that around me, I can tell you, it made me like who I am. So I can be like the most funniest person there is. But when it comes to like getting a grasp on life, when it comes to like achieving certain things, I take my inspiration from my mom. That go-getter, no-nonsense type of approach. That person who would give her last for the people that she loves. And that's the approach I take in my work at Erin. That's the approach I take in my personal life as well. I always give everyone my best. And that, I feel like it was inspired mostly by my mom and what I saw growing up.
And I'm sure she would be proud of who you are. You know, were there certain instances that you can maybe point to, or certain things that occurred that really kind of left an imprint on you and, you know, maybe changed the direction or trajectory of your life or things that, you know, your mom did to, encourage you to choose a good path in life?
So one of the things that my mom did, like when I was going to college, I lived pretty close to the college, to the university, and my mom made me live on campus. And I think that reason was that she wanted me to be fully immersed the whole universe to experience, to be able to choose the direction that I wanted to be in. So, and I've made some lasting friends there as well. There were points where, because I'm a reformed party animal, I told you that. I am no saint. So there were points where I deviated from the path that my mom wanted me to take. There are times where my priorities were not straight, but she was always there to rein me back in. And I also had a brother who, because of his age, he took that father figure role in my life as well. So he staged an intervention. I was in my second year of university and my brother staged an intervention.
Wow.
And my brother cried. He cried. Wow. That's how bad I was. I told you, I was really bad. I'm not joking. So my brother, and he's this person, I've never seen him cry before. Like, he's just a tough person. And for him to stage that intervention, so he came to my my dorm at the University of West Indies, and he sat me down and he cried. And he's like, you see how hard our mom has it to kind of give you this this experience. Like, she was a secretary. Secretaries in Jamaica don't earn a lot of money. And my brother cried and he was like, you can't waste this opportunity, Ken. You cannot let all mom's hard work go to waste. And he cried. And to this day, I always remember my brother crying at his wedding. When I was asked to give a speech, I spoke about that. And I can say that I owe that change in path that my life took to him, and to the hard work and that steadfast commitment from my mom as well. You know, because if that intervention wasn't changed, I'm sure I would not be here sitting here right now. Yeah. I am positive I would not be here right now.
if you could say thank you to one person in your life, who would it be and what would you say?
I have so many persons to thank. Of course, I'll always thank my family. You've heard the great things that they've done for me. But I've also had many, many, many persons that I've met at the workplace who have just taken a liking to me. And that's how it starts. Someone may see something in you and they're like, okay, come under my wings. So I had that when I was working at the cabinet office as well. I'm still very close with that person, Hyacinth. And that person had me under her wings, showed me the ropes in kind of like in analysis, in doing briefs and so forth, just so that I could succeed at my job. At the end of the day, I was known as one of the best analysts in the cabinet office because of that person who did that. Yeah. She had nothing to gain.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Even before that, I had a supervisor, Joaquin, and I was working at the Ministry of ICT. It was telecommunications, right? Yeah. And she was my supervisor, but she was very close to me. Like, after work, like, we had a very good out of work relationship that kind of grounded me in terms of what do I want to accomplish in my life. I was married at that time too, and she was an integral person in helping me to even decide to get divorced. And that even changed my life today as well. Because if I hadn't been divorced, if I hadn't gotten my life back in order, then certain things wouldn't have presented, certain opportunities wouldn't have presented itself to me. And I can say even now, recently, James too, and I'm sorry for cutting you, James too, like James Kerstedt, like I've always found someone who just embraces me and who just wants to see me shine. And James, since coming to Canada, James has been one of those persons in my life as well.
Yeah.
He is someone I can call up at any time. And he's one of the busiest persons ever. I can call him at any time and I can ask him anything, work-related, non-work-related, and he will always give me that honest feedback because he wants me to grow as a person.
Yeah. James is amazing. I mean, just with some of the interactions that, you know, we've been fortunate to have with him via Aaron and, you know, a few different other kind of opportunities and stuff. He is really world-class when it comes to, you know, not only his craft, but also, you know, his ability to kind of reach back and lend a helping hand. If there was somebody maybe in that inflection point that you kind of talked about where, you know, you had a decision to you know, kind of go down the path that you're going down versus change your trajectory and stuff. If there's someone who's maybe listening to this and they are maybe at that same inflection point where they kind of get this feeling that they know that they're not going down the path or they're not achieving the things that they want to achieve, or, you know, maybe things aren't necessarily aligning with them or for them. What would you say to that person to maybe help them consider how they could potentially make a change?
And I would first say to them that the impact that they have made in my life has been astounding. Like, I'm still growing and I'm still achieving the things that I aim to achieve in this lifetime. But what I would say to them is not to get discouraged. Like, life is a journey, and don't feel like you have to get it right now. There will always be bumps in the road, multiple bumps in the road that you can capitalize on to do a 360 turn in your life. Yeah. Yeah. So it does not have to happen now. Don't stress about it. And make the change when you're ready to make it, because nothing is more unsustainable than when you try to make a change when you're not committed to it.
So switching gears a little bit, you know, obviously you're doing some really impactful work through Erin, and that's kind of where you and I have had the pleasure to officially connect. But kind of what has been your trajectory to kind of get into a role like that? And tell us a little bit about the building blocks.
I studied when I was at the university. I did my first degree in English and social policy. And then I went back and did a master's in communications for behavior change. Part of that is like project and program management. So when I left Jamaica, I had like ton of experience in research and policy. Like, I spent almost like maybe a month short of 10 years in the public service in Jamaica. So I came here. I worked a few smaller jobs. The job that really exposed me to project management was when I worked with Quest College. I managed the Family Caregiver Wellness Initiative program. That experience working at the college kind of opened me up to a lot of continuing education opportunities. And one of the things that I really spent a lot of time doing was kind of fine-tuning my project management skills, and then implementing them in the program that I was managing as well. So I would say that my experience at Northwest College was the thing that opened me up to much more in terms of what Canada can offer. I was always trying to get back into the field of policy and research. I was always, like, from coming to Canada, I was always doing that. But when I worked for Northwest College, I realized that it's much bigger than that. Like, I can do much more than just that. And then while I was at Northwest College, I was also studying at McEwen University.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and I was also, you know, a single full-time mom. So, so I realized at that point that I'm a person who can effectively manage a lot. That's when I realized that I can manage. I'm a workhorse. But it showed me that I could manage a lot, because I could accomplish my tasks, I could get good grades in school, and I could meet the needs of my daughter at the same time. And then I just said, you know what? I am going to look for a job that is dynamic. Yeah. A job that has a little bit of, like, I have so much education. Like, what's the point in having education if you can't really use it? So I wanted to use every aspect of what I spent my money on to kind of make a difference. Like, and I really want to make my, like, I'm at this point in my life where it's not money that drives me. Money is so important, but it's not money that drives me. Like, I can take a low paying job if I get that sense of accomplishment. And so I left Northwest in pursuit of a position at Erin, because I felt that it was a shitload of work to be done.
You can swear, like, yeah.
It was a lot of work to be done, and I just wanted to sink my teeth in it, to be honest. Yeah.
So let's expand on that a little bit. I would love to also put a footnote in what accomplishment means to you, but and maybe it's something that you can expand a little bit on this next question of, you know, what makes you dedicated in the slang term bullish on the work that Erin is doing and the problems that y'all are solving. Maybe provide a little bit of context on what Erin is for people. And yeah, if you can kind of touch on what makes you really excited about the work that you know, you and the organization are doing, and how does that tie into you feeling accomplished?
Yeah, so the Edmonton Regional Innovation Network, short for short ERIN, it's a volunteer-run organization powered by people who are passionate about like pushing Edmonton's innovation ecosystem. They want to see entrepreneurs grow. They want to see businesses formed. They want to see people hired. They want to put Edmonton on the map. That's the sole purpose of ERIN. And ERIN was created by the Alberta Innovates. So Alberta Innovates is like the brainchild of the Regional Innovation Network. And they created that because they recognize that each region is different. And they look at things on a provincial level, but they needed that closer interaction within the region so that they can effectively activate each region and get each region popping and leverage on their strength as well. So ERIN is funded primarily by Alberta Innovates. And Alberta Innovates are members of the steering committee in an ex officio role. And what ex officio means is that they don't vote on how the money that they give us is spent. Right? They're just there to just to help. Like if we run into an issue, they can provide us with higher level information as well.
Yeah.
But it is the decision making is primarily done by the community, Edmonton's community. And I can tell you that having an organization that does not particularly have a foot in the race, they're just primarily there to kind of look at the gaps, to kind of fund what needs to be funded, or even to take a step back and look at what is being funded and see if it works for the ecosystem. That is gold to me. It's absolute gold to me. Because when you don't have a foot in the race, you're more likely to make decisions that are beneficial to the mass.
Yeah.
So what I've done is leverage that great underlying, what do you call it now, building block of what ERIN is for the people, by the people. And that inspires me to kind of work on the changes that you're seeing right now in Edmonton's ecosystem. So we've had our problems. I've heard, like I've heard so many stories about the money being managed by a select few, only a few people having access to it, not in my house.
Yeah.
That cannot happen in my house. And that was the first thing I have set out to change, is to make ERIN more accessible, to make even the decision-making process very open so that there's no question about, oh, we're just filtering money one place. No. Yeah. That's my thing. And I spoke about it before, about equity. Equity is not serving one set of players. Equity is about touching people differently, but in a way that levels the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you will find some people getting more money, but maybe they needed more money to be on the same level playing field as another person. So that's the approach I take in ERIN. And that's the approach that the volunteers take in ERIN as well. You know, so I'm just that face that basically does what they want, but we all share the same common principle of tearing down the barriers, growing the ecosystem where everyone can benefit, getting rid of all conflicts of interest, you know, making things a little bit more front-facing and visible. And even a part of that too is like, this is another big thing, a thing I'm working on, is to create like a dashboard where anyone can go on the ERIN website and see how the ecosystem is doing. Anyone can see where the gaps are. And then in sharing that data, it's the hope that we can spark innovation as well. We can start the creation of more programs that are gap servicing.
Absolutely. Like, we're not talking about a few small projects. Like, we're talking about like providing resources to massive, what could be potentially massive big projects, and extending that so that it actually, like you said, touches various communities and various individuals and stuff who are trying to find their way in the ecosystem, right? Because I think one of the challenging things, especially for us as we work with underestimated innovators and creators, is it's very difficult to peel back the layers and figure out where you can go for help, right? Or where are the missing gaps that maybe you can't lean so much on doing here, and you have to maybe look externally. So I think it's just really important work that, you know, you and the Erin team are spearheading. And kind of bringing things full circle, how do you define accomplishment, whether personally or kind of under this umbrella of Erin?
You know what? I define accomplishment by the feedback that I'm getting. Hmm. So I listen. My ears are always on the ground. I'm always listening. Always listening to the ecosystem, always listening to the chatter. And when I hear people say, oh, wow, Erin is doing some great stuff, or, oh, wow, they finally put out a directory where people can just go and see what's there in the ecosystem. Oh, wow, they offered more funding streams and stuff like that. Like, hearing those positive feedback, seeing the social media chatter, seeing people come up to me and saying, wow, you're really transforming Edmonton, the ecosystem. Like, Edmonton needed this champion. Like, absolutely. People coming up to me and saying that, I feel so accomplished. That's better than any money, Terry, compensation. Yeah. That gives me that sense of accomplishment, just hearing that. Just even hearing Alberta Innovates saying, wow, Edmonton is changing. Like, they're feeling, Alberta Innovates, because they've been around a long time, they're feeling the energy that has not been in Edmonton for a very long time. Absolutely. And for them, at that level, to kind of sense that, I know that I'm doing something right. I know that Erin collectively is doing something right. And that just makes me feel so accomplished when I can make other people happy.
And, you know, not to put any, you know, lightning in your, you know, your brain here, but, you know, I can definitely say, as somebody who has been involved in the Edmonton and Albertan ecosystem and stuff, that, you know, we really felt at Sea Tribe the material difference of how much less bureaucracy there was and how much more straightforwardness there was kind of working directly with you and the Erin team, you know, versus maybe some of the other agencies that were in place at a time and stuff, right? So we, you know, can vouch to that 100%. And it makes a difference, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all kind of going towards the same goal, right? You know, we all want to see a place where the ecosystem here thrives, and, you know, we remove that confusion for the next generation to figure out how they can be innovative, be creative, explore their passion projects, do the things that they care about, and not just constituted to maybe the industries that Alberta knows really well, right? You know, there's oil and gas, there's healthcare, there's government, there's construction, there's consulting, and there's nothing wrong with those industries. Don't get me wrong. And as stable as Edmonton and Alberta is, like, benefits so much off the backs of those industries, right? But for people who are maybe more interested in the creative sectors, or, you know, the technology sectors, or maybe some of these other nuance or fringe spaces that don't always get the same level of recognition based on kind of where they are, you know, situated geographically, it can become really difficult to kind of navigate that minutia. So yes, I wholeheartedly agree with your sentiment in terms of how the landscape is changing. And just by just changing the approach and changing the willingness to, as you said, like, keep your ears on the ground and kind of listen to the feedback and actively iterate on that feedback makes, you know, a tremendous difference.
And you know what, Sar? The other part of this is not being afraid to pull bricks, like to pull bricks on anything, not being afraid to rethink something. I feel like a lot of people feel like if you take a step back, if you change something, it's a failure. I don't see that as a failure. I am the quickest person to note when something is not going right. I do not cover it up. everyone knows. Like, why am I covering up something going wrong? Maybe someone who I spoke to can help me to figure out a solution to it. That's what problem solving is. Like, you don't sit down, hide what's going wrong, and then hope that it change. Problem solving is talking to different people, taking a step back, pulling back, reassess, like, what have you been doing? Where can the changes occur? You know, like, those are the things that are needed in this ecosystem. And I'm very big with change. I do not see change as bad. Change is never bad. In the long run, change always leads to great innovation, to great things happening. And that's what I'm doing here with Erin. I'm leaning into change. I'm changing Edmonton's narrative.
And do you think some of that kind of sentiment aligns with kind of your own personal growth trajectory and how, you know, you were able to take a step back from the type of kind of lifestyle that you had and, you know, apply change? And it's kind of that saying where you take one step back to take two steps forward. Like, do you think that there's a little bit of a correlation there in terms of your own personal experience and how that applies?
Wholeheartedly, I cannot tell you how many times I have stopped, looked at where I am, and just totally reassessed and kind of changed my trajectory. Yeah. And you know what? An important part of that is the people that you have around you. Yeah. So I don't have many friends. That's the one thing about me. I consider myself a functioning introvert. I am. Because I say functioning introvert because I know how to step out of myself when the need occurs. But I don't have many friends. But the friends that I do have around me are friends that are brutally honest. And those are the people that I get along with. I cannot get along with the people who smile with me all the time. So yes, though I hear the ecosystem saying good things about Erin now, I appreciate the ones who are saying, but you could do this, even take it one step further. I listen to those people a lot. Because then those are the people who are driving me to surpass myself. I had a meeting with Michael Kerr, with the other RIN managers, and they asked the question, like, they were doing just like icebreakers, and they asked the question of each RIN manager. My question was, do you want to be famous? And I was like, oh yes, I want to be famous, but not like Hollywood famous. I want to be famous for making a drastic change, for doing something that is so long lasting, so beneficial that it lasts. Even when I'm far away, that's the type of fame I'm chasing.
Yeah. I love that. Well, hopefully this video podcast is one little nugget along that journey of Danny's fame, climb to fame here. You know, Danny, talk a little bit about like the programs that Erin offers. Like, obviously there's really important work that Erin is doing, but yeah, expand a little bit more concretely what those programs are and how people who are potentially listening in can inquire or take part.
Yeah, so Erin basically funds programs that matches the different levels that an entrepreneur may be on. So you have programs for the beginner entrepreneur who are just maybe thinking about an idea, who wants to probably develop it. So we have our stream of startup programs that they can jump into that can help them to flesh that out, build their business plan, help them to start their validation journey as well, and to help them set up something more concrete. There's also the Expert on Demand program, and that's for a little bit more established entrepreneur who is looking to either improve their market access, who is looking to specifically solve a challenge that they're facing that may be impacting the growth of their business. It could be like helping them broaden their sales funnel, could be helping them like maybe change their marketing strategy and so forth. So what that program does is pairs them with experts within those respective industry. And Erin pays the salary of those experts for a set number of hours to help them to accomplish that as well. There's also the post-secondary institution alignment with the entrepreneurs in residence. So you have entrepreneur in residences, the different PSIs in Edmonton, and their role is to work with the alumni, students, and even staff who may want a little bit of fleshing out of the idea, get them to a point where they can filter into the other startup programs as well as access the BDS grant. That BDS grant is specifically for the PSIs, like entrepreneurs out within the PSIs to kind of expand on their business in the same way the expert demand is designed. It's designed in the same way. It's just called something different because it serves a different part of the population. Separate and apart from that, we have our membership base. I think right now we have like maybe 140 something members in Erin, and a bunch of those are service providers within Edmonton as well. Like for instance, you have Isaac. So what we do is sometimes we get entrepreneurs coming to us and they're like, okay, I need X, Y, and Z. If we don't have a program that can meet their needs, we refer them out to one of our members. So there's always somebody jumping in and can help. Yeah. And these programs are like free of charge. So you can just visit the Edmonton Unlimited website. You can even check out our website. So you can get edmontonrain.ca to find out more about the programs we sponsor. But these programs too are always changing and expanding. So keep an eye out on our website because more is to come.
And based on something that you've gone through that's been hard in your life, you know, would you go through it again and why?
Yes, I would. So something that has been hard for me was packing up and coming to Canada. Mm-hmm. That was really hard because I had a very established career in Jamaica. But circumstances didn't give me a choice to relocate. And I did it for my daughter, who was born in Canada. So I relocated for her. And it was a very hard journey. I can tell you, and you probably know, maybe you can hear from friends that newcomers have it hard. So hard that even there's just newcomers really have it hard.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them... faced with unemployment, they have to create their own companies, you know, like just to survive. So to make that, to kind of really touch into Canada's market, it was really hard for me. But I would not change anything. And the reason why is my daughter is happy over here, much happier over here. And I can say hands down that Canada is a very great place to live. I love Jamaica. But I also love Canada. It's really hard on me. And I would also say that I, I have that grit. I never give up. And I think my experience in Canada sharpened or strengthened that resolve that I have. I never give up. If I see a roadblock, I find a way to either jump over it or find another route. I just don't stop. Yeah. I just keep going.
And what are some of the misconceptions that maybe people have when it comes to that journey of, packing up your bags in Jamaica and coming to Canada?
Oh, my gosh. The misconception is that, you have New York is known as the Big Apple, the land of dreams and opportunity. The misconception is that you will just pack up your bags, come over here, and people will be like, here's a job. Work. I'll pay you. You know, I recognize that you studied a lot in Jamaica or wherever you're coming from. And the government assessed your qualifications. That's great. That's a misconception that they think they can just come here and you can just start the life that you left wherever you're coming from back here. But that's not the case. There is something called culture. And I know people always think it's a barrier about when people use that culture thing to you, but it's really important. You have to understand the culture that you're coming into because I can guarantee you it's different from the culture that you're coming from. And that alone is, it's sometimes a hard lesson because you do make mistakes. And in making those mistakes, you get to refine and understand the culture and become even more intertwined into society as well. And the more you embrace culture and the way how they do things, it's the more you get to leverage yourself into spaces that provide you with more opportunities. It's hard. It's not easy. Get over the misconception that it's easy. Get over the misconception that there is no learning curve. There's a high learning curve. Get over the misconception that someone owes you something. No one owes you anything here.
Absolutely. And if there's one tip, kind of building off of what you just shared, or you can feel free to take it in a different direction, but if there's one tip or one nugget of insight that you can give to somebody who is thinking about making that leap into, coming to Canada wherever they are, you know, it could be from Jamaica, it could be from wherever. What is that one thing you would recommend for them?
Oh my gosh, I didn't do it this way because I came to a place where I had no family and I had to do it the hard way. But if possible, go to somewhere where you have family, because they are the first, like they're very good at helping you to cushion, helping you to navigate, helping you to learn those soft cultural skills that are needed for you to succeed. So that's one of the best advice I would give you. The next thing is study something that in a field that is needed over here. So don't just go and study sociology just for studying sociology's sake.
Yeah.
Do some market research. It doesn't matter how young you are. Do some market research and find out like what's missing over here.
Yeah.
And that, in my opinion, if you study that, it doesn't matter if it's a foreign qualification or not, because it's a skill that's needed. You're going to be embraced quicker. So that's an advice I would give someone.
And expanding on that point, you know, your young daughter, if she's listening to this in the future, what would you tell her?
Oh, my word. She is going to be a powerhouse. I can tell you that. She is much smarter than me, much kinder than me, and much more sociable than me. So I can't even give her any advice. But what I can say to her is, you're doing a good job. And I will say to you, keep it up, steadfast. I know it's important to have fun. But find that happy balance in life and never do anything that you will regret.
Last question I have before the rapid fire. Do you ever plan to kind of take these learnings that you have here in Canada and find a way to bring it back to Jamaica?
I've thought about it so much. My brothers have been really connecting with me, telling me that I can do so much more. Yeah, I really do want to do something similar because I worked in the ICT field, information communication and technology field, and I'm still pretty close with my past director. I feel like Jamaica could benefit from a regional innovation network style, like what we have here, because not necessarily by parish, but I think... Because I think Jamaica is broken up into Middlesex, Surrey, three regions. And that has like maybe four or five parishes in there. I feel like just like here, those different areas in Jamaica, they have different access to different things, different limitations that could probably stymie the ease at which someone can start a business. And I really do believe that anything that's technology aligned, so it doesn't have to be a robotics company, but anything that uses cutting edge technology in your business, that's the way forward. And we need to be creating more of those businesses, even in the smaller countries like Jamaica, and then do a model there. And then maybe have CARICOM, like the other CARICOM countries, copying that model within their respective countries as well. So that's something I've thought about, but let's see. Let's solve Edmonton first.
So, you know, X amount of years down the road, when we get a Jaren in Jamaica, you know, we're going to know that it originated on this podcast.
Yes.
Awesome. So rapid fire, starting off, five questions. You get five words or less, and I'm going to hold you to that. So no going over. Favorite anime show?
Oh, Black Clover.
Dream vacation destination?
Paris.
Paris. Ooh.
Yes.
If we have more time, we dig into that one. Maybe we'll save that for the next podcast. Favorite shoe brand?
I'm Jamaican and we love Clarks.
Your favorite party anthem?
My favorite party anthem? Party anthem.
Party
anthem. Party rockers.
Actually.
Yeah.
And what is one book that you recommend?
Oh, God. I have so many books, but maybe Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. I will stop there, but I would explain more if you had allowed me.
Danny, I think we'd love to make sure that there is enough things that we can dig into for future podcasts. So I think I'm going to leave the cliffhanger like that. I appreciate you making the time to be on the podcast today, sharing, you know, a very heartfelt background about yourself and, you know, the trajectory and, you know, the, you know, just the amazing growth that you've had as an individual, you know, personally and professionally. And thank you for sharing more about Erin and some of the programming that people can tap into. Where can people find you online? Where can people find Erin online?
Yeah, so if you go to their to the website and the About Us, you can learn more about those different persons who are volunteering on the steering committee. Down the bottom, if you go down to ex officio member, you see specialist. If you click on that, it leads you directly to my LinkedIn page. That's the first step in connecting with me. You can also reach out to me at info@edmontonrain.ca. I'm very accessible. Very accessible. So and don't hesitate to reach out.
Awesome. Awesome. And we'll be sure to put this into the show notes as well so that people can easily find it in the podcast notes. So it's been a pleasure. it takes a C-Tribe village to do what we're doing. And it's a pleasure to have you on board, and we'll see you at the festival, hopefully in a month's time.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Awesome.